This is iFaith 105 from Zephaniah. In our previous talk, we looked at Habakkuk, one who ministered to Judah and spoke of, well, his perplexity that God was not acting, firstly, to deal with the oppression within God's holy nation, supposedly holy, and then when he used the Babylonians to punish Judah, as he had promised, Habakkuk wasn't happy with that. He struggled, and finally, he's okay. He's so okay that at the end of Habakkuk, even though things aren't going great, even though the situation doesn't seem to be fruitful, he has his joy, his identity in God. It's such an important book of the Bible, Habakkuk, though little known. We can rejoice, even if we don't have high scores in all the typical measurements, all the metrics. Well, the time of Zephaniah is actually a little bit slightly earlier than Habakkuk. It's a time of prophetic silence from the early 600s to the later 600s. It was not a happy half century under the wicked King Manasseh, and his grandson Josiah tried to turn things around, but without a lot of success. Judah is basically a colony of Assyria. Assyria is calling the shots. This is well before 612, which is when Assyria was destroyed and when Nineveh fell. So, there was a partial reformation under Josiah. It's not enough. The basic message, the prophecies in Zephaniah against Judah and Jerusalem, and also some of the neighboring countries. And then there's an alternation. You cannot miss it. It'll go from global destruction to punishment of Israel. It'll go from Jerusalem's in trouble to the whole world will be on fire. There's that alternation I hope you'll pay attention to. As one writer puts it, from the ruins of Judah's destruction, Zephaniah expects a remnant of chosen people to survive. And beyond the dark pall, suspended above his message of judgment, there's a brighter, though distant, horizon. I think that's exactly right. There is some light at the end, but it's distant. Oh, and interestingly, Zephaniah, you know, the prophets often use poetry. Zephaniah is almost entirely poetry, except for three verses. So let's dig in. The word of the Lord that came to Zephaniah: I will sweep everything away from the face of the earth, declares the Lord. I will sweep away both man and beast. I will sweep away the birds in the sky and the fish in the sea and the idols that cause the wicked to stumble. This is an image of universal destruction. He'll sweep. This reminds us of the phrase in Isaiah, the broom of destruction, which we find in Isaiah 14. But is a broom a weapon or is it a cleaning implement? I guess they've probably been used for both. But there's a broom of destruction that will sweep away everything. And this feels very universal. It's a little bit like the prophet Micah. Micah's prophesying against God's people in the 700s. But Micah begins with an image of universal judgment. We have mountains melting, valleys splitting, we've got fire. And you think, oh, this is the end. It's the, quote, apocalypse, to use or misuse that common word today. Sweeping everything away like a flood. And yet, the judgment is not the end of the world. It's for Judah and Jerusalem. But it points beyond itself to something else. I will destroy all mankind on the face of the earth, declares the Lord. I will stretch out my hand against Judah and against all who live in Jerusalem. I will destroy every remnant of Baal worship in this place, the very names of the idolatrous priests. Those who bow down on the roofs to worship the starry host, those who bow down and swear by the Lord and who also swear by Molech, those who turn back from following the Lord and neither seek the Lord nor inquire of him. So we've got all mankind being removed from the earth. And then he focuses on Jerusalem, which is a fairly small city in a very small country, part of the world. I mean, it's really small, but the things that happen there are really big. So it is a, really something, isn't it? I love the way he says after that, be silent before the sovereign Lord, for the day of the Lord is near. So we had that alternation, which I mentioned, from Jerusalem, and he'll particularly target the officials, the royal family, those who should be targeted, the religious establishment, and then the rest of the world. It's kind of like Matthew 24. you ever been confused reading Matthew 24, it seems like he's talking about Israel, Jerusalem, the temple, and then, wait a minute, is he talking about the whole world? Well, God judges Jerusalem, and in a way, that's a picture of what will happen in the future. It's not like a photograph or anything, but Matthew 24 is focused on Jerusalem, but as the chapter goes on, and by the time you get to chapter 25, we seem to be talking about the end of the world. So that kind of alternation, it's not either or, it is both and. And you will have noticed idolatry, worshiping the weather god, the fertility god Baal or Baal. We've got stars, so people were into astrology and astral beings. Molech, the one who demanded child sacrifice. And I wonder if Zephaniah were to come today, here to Scotland or to your country, wherever you live, what idolatries would he identify? The idolatries of Israel were literal idols, also putting confidence in the state, in the government, in treaties and things like that. But we have so many idolatries today. Think about it. We also saw the phrase, the day of the Lord is near. Now, I mean, this guy's writing way over 2,000 years ago, you know, almost 2650. The day of the Lord is near. What happened? I think a biblical response might be that the day of the Lord is always near. That may be helpful. That phrase, the day of the Lord, is something we find first in Amos. It emphasizes judgment, like the judgment day. And then we see it in Isaiah. Isaiah stresses the nearness of it. It's at any time. So you have kind of, is it going to be soon? Is it going to be far away? Both seem to be the case. And then in the next shift, back to judgment, because this is really a message on judgment. That's why Christians need this. That day will be a day of wrath, a day of distress and anguish, a day of trouble and ruin, a day of darkness and gloom, a day of clouds and blackness, a day of trumpet and battle cry against the fortified cities. You get the idea. It's a day. It's not a 24-hour period. It's a time. And it says, neither their silver nor their gold will be able to save them on the day of the Lord's wrath. Though the judgment day itself, we shouldn't think it lasts 24 hours or 12 hours, but it's something that will definitely come. But even between now and the last judgment, there are many intermediate judgments, and in this case, especially against God's people. Then we read, in the fire of his jealousy, the whole earth will be consumed, for he will make a sudden end of all who live on the earth. Okay, so now we're back to the whole world. And then back to Judah again. Chapter 2, verse 1. Gather together, gather yourselves together, you shameful nation. Seek the Lord, all you humble of the land, you who do what he commands. Seek righteousness. Seek humility. Perhaps you'll be sheltered on the day of the Lord's anger. And then he prophesies against various nations residing near Israel. And then back to Jerusalem, chapter 3, the final chapter. Woe to the city of oppressors, rebellious and defiled. She obeys no one. She accepts no correction. She does not trust in the Lord. She does not draw near to her God. Wow, I hope that doesn't describe me ever. Wow, her officials within her are roaring lions. Her rulers are evening wolves who leave nothing for the morning. Her prophets are unprincipled. They're treacherous people. Her priests profane the sanctuary and do violence to the law. This is a complete and utter failure of leadership. Jerusalem is denounced as rebellious and defiled, the oppressing city. She had been oppressed by foreign powers in the past, like Egypt. Think of Midian, Assyria, very soon. But she's the oppressor because the haves oppress the have-nots. The upper classes oppress the lower classes. There's corruption. There's a failure of leadership on the part of government officials, prophets, and priests. They don't learn the lessons of history or even current events. And like Babylon and like Nineveh, there's this amazing confidence in their city, Jerusalem. There was so much confidence in the structure, not just the general architecture, but the fact that God had chosen this place, Zion, and that this amazing temple was built. Zephaniah's oracle, as one commentator puts it, Zephaniah's oracle punctures the arrogant delusion. Of course, it's not just the leaders who are at fault. We also read, at that time, I will search Jerusalem with lamps and punish those who are complacent, who think the Lord will do nothing. Their wealth will be plundered, their houses demolished. I'm in my house here at Edinburgh. What would it be like if a foreign power came, plundered my wealth? Well, that wouldn't take that long. But demolished my house, demolished all the houses around here? It's actually unthinkable. I mean, it's thinkable, but we don't think about that because we're so secure. Puncturing the arrogant delusion, that image of searching Jerusalem with lamps, as though, you know, maybe we've missed something here. Maybe we're, you know, this is a thorough investigation. Who's on God's side? Punish the complacent. Are you complacent? Are we as God's family complacent? Is God unfair to punish? No, of course, God is just. The Lord within her is righteous. He does no wrong. Morning by morning, he dispenses his justice. And each new day, he does not fail. Yet the unrighteous know no shame. See, Jerusalem remains unrepentant. Of Jerusalem, I thought, surely you will fear me and accept correction. But they were still eager to act corruptly in all they did. And then again, the whole world will be consumed by the fire of my jealous anger. So you can see judgment is fair. And it's not that, you know, well, we're God's people. We think we're so great and it's us and them and the whole world. No, God is tougher even on his own people. He's not going to do anything to the world he doesn't do to his own people. He's just and loving and he gives so many chances. Is this a heavy video sermon? Yes. If Zephaniah continued that way, maybe he wouldn't be listened to without that spoonful of sugar, hard for the medicine to go down. So there will be happier times. And at the end of chapter 3, he speaks of purifying the lips of the peoples, and we have all the world coming together and following God, and we have reward for the meek and the humble, the humble. And on that day, I will say to Jerusalem, don't fear Zion, don't let your hands hang limp. The Lord your God is with you, the mighty warrior saves you. He will take great light in you in his love. He will no longer rebuke you, but will rejoice over you with singing. Now, not all translations put it that way, but it seems that most of them do. This image of God rejoicing, singing over his people. So the destruction of Jerusalem is not the end. There is a future beyond the destruction that Zephaniah promises. And that does come, of course, around 605 to 587. That destruction will come, but God will transform all nations, formerly enemies. He'll transform them into a loving family and thus fulfill the promise to Abraham in Genesis 12. Through the Messiah, God will bless all the world. Let's close now. Zephaniah tells us that all the world will be judged. But it's time for judgment to begin with the household of God. All the prophets are like that. And well, 1 Peter 4:17, for the time has come for judgment to begin with the household of God. If it begins with us, what will be the end for those who do not obey the gospel of God? See, even if you do obey God, you're held to a standard. And if you don't, is there less hope? There should be even greater sobriety. Are we prepared? Are there idols in our lives? Things that get our attention, our time, our money, our interest, that even come before God? Are we complacent? The Lord was searching the city with lamps. And he finds the complacent. He knows our hearts. With his broom of destruction, there's nothing he misses. Are we failing to depend on the Lord, instead putting our trust in something else? I love the way this guy put it. It's easier to think of his words addressing the corruption of the ancient world than to let them disturb the unruffled waters of our modern world. But fail to grasp the urgency of the prophet's message, we will. If we do not let it penetrate the complacency of our own century. So, this is a sobering message. It's a message of judgment. It's not complicated. The Bible teaches there will be a judgment day. It will come. It's near. Be prepared. And judgment begins with the household of God. Be silent before the sovereign Lord, for the day of the Lord is near. The next iFaith message will be on Obadiah. I'll be recording it in Israel very soon, and it's called Getting Even. God bless.